This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
Are you finding it harder to watch your favourite sport? Because we know with the dominance of streaming platforms only growing, more and more live sport that used to be available for everyone free on TV is now locked behind paywalls. A lot of you pay for sport, but what is the real cost? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Later we're getting into this chat as Australians are finding it harder to access their favourite sport. I'm keen to hear what you think, like if you subscribe to a lot of streaming platforms, how much it's costing you, what you think of the quality of what you're watching. Do you think it's better or worse? Also coming up, there's fresh hope for a ceasefire in Gaza. Donald Trump says Israel has agreed to necessary conditions. We're going to explain what that means. First, though, we're starting with that childcare story out of Victoria, and a warning, it does contain some distressing details.
Hack. Looking across Australia, are Australian children safe in childcare centres?
On Triple J.
Yeah, yesterday we brought you the news that a Melbourne childcare worker had been charged with 70 offences, including sexual assault, and it sparked a lot of distress in the community. Today, there was an update from authorities. A second man in Melbourne is now facing investigation. And the Victorian government has also announced a review and some changes in the childcare sector, including a register of workers, a potential ban on personal devices from childcare centres, security cameras. If you are an early childhood educator, I'm keen to hear what you think of all this. Like, do you support the changes? What kind of response would you like to see? Message in 0439 757 555. In a bit, we're going to speak with some workers. But first, here's Ariana Lucente with an update.
This sort of news turns your normal daily life upside down.
A suppression order was lifted yesterday, revealing a Melbourne childcare worker, 26-year-old Joshua Dale Brown, was charged with 70 offences related to sexual assault and producing child abuse material. Today, a second man, who police will allege knows the first, was charged too.
There's some reports that a second man has been charged by police with dozens of sex crimes. It's just come out today.
Here's what's new today. So, according to the Melbourne Magistrates Court, Michael Simon Wilson, living in Hoppers Crossing, southwest of Melbourne, has been charged with serious offences, including bestiality. He's also facing charges related to child abuse material and sex offences. Victoria Police say the charges relate to an alleged sexual assault of a teenage boy in Coburg. Wilson and Brown are due to appear in court in September. Brown's alleged offending and his work at 20 centres across Melbourne prompted the health department yesterday to recommend more than 1,000 kids be screened for infectious disease.
So many parents turn to each other and ask that question, like we all did. How could this sort of offending be possible within a childcare centre?
For 2 days now, the news has been rocking families across the country, including parents outside the Creative Garden Childcare Centre in Point Cook in southwest Melbourne, where Joshua Brown worked and linked to the 8 alleged victims.
Scary, actually. I feel a bit sick.
Maybe it will haunt me forever. Did something happen to my child?
There is a substantial amount of work that is already underway across the Commonwealth and state and territory governments. Here in Victoria, though, I won't wait.
The Victorian government has announced an urgent review into the state's childcare sector. Jacinta Allen is the Premier and did another press conference today.
We will start building the Victorian Register to give families an extra layer of checks and balances as soon as possible.
Changes are coming, including bringing in a Victorian Register of childcare workers, while the National Register is still underway. There'll also be a ban on personal devices at childcare centres by the 26th of September.
Childcare centres who don't comply with this ban will have a fine imposed upon them of up to $50,000.
And an urgent review into the sector will happen over the next 6 weeks to look at what immediately can be done.
I want this Victorian review to examine options, for example, of installing CCTV in childcare centres.
Affected families will also be eligible for a $5,000 payment.
the interests of a national framework, it is a frustratingly slow process.
The Victorian Minister for Children, Lizzie Blandthorne, says reform across the country is slow. So has the Federal Education Minister, Jason Clare.
It's taken too long to do the work necessary to make sure that our Working with Children check system is up to scratch. There are things that we've already done. We've banned the use of personal mobile phones and devices in childcare centres, changed the rules around mandatory reporting from 7 days to 24 hours where there are complaints about sexual or physical abuse.
But he says there's more work to do, with Federal Parliament back-sitting in 3 weeks' time.
The legislation that I'll bring to the Parliament, if services aren't up to scratch, that we have the power as a government to cut their funding off. For every parent that is directly affected by this, they would be bloody angry. And I know that they're angry because one of those parents is a friend of mine and her two little girls are directly affected by this.
And it's not just parents. It's the childcare workers in the sector too.
They've been so deeply affected too by the allegations that were made public.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente reporting there. And remember, if this story has raised any issues for you, Lifeline is always there on 13 11 14. Bravehearts as well offers support for survivors of child sexual abuse. You can contact them on 1800 272 831. And I am keen to hear from you. If you are in the early childhood education sector, how have you been dealing with this news over the past couple of days? What do you think should change? We've got someone on the text line now who says, why did it take this to change the Working with Children check process? This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. We're talking about this childcare story out of Victoria, the reaction, what it means for the industry going forward. With me now is Seb Hand, who's from the United Workers Union, which represents a lot of early childhood educators. Seb, what's your reaction to this news out of Victoria today? What we've learned, obviously, this week, but also the announcements from the Victorian government.
Look, I think a lot of people at the moment are feeling quite disgusted, and we're feeling like there needs to be a lot more done to fix what's going on.
What do you think are some of the things that the Victorian government has announced today? Like, they've put forward this register of workers that they're going to bring in, also banning personal devices at childcare centres. Do you think that's going to help?
I think the registry is definitely going to help. I think it's important that, just from a professional standpoint, when you're working with children, it is important that there is some sort of checks and balances. I also think the review into the Working with Children's check is something that needs to be done, not just in Victoria, but federally. I think a lot of states have some pitfalls there. Regarding the personal devices, I think for educators, that's a no-brainer. Educators should not have personal devices on the floor. I also think that families should be made aware that bringing their own devices onto the floor and taking photos and filming children, even if it's in a, you know, a parent filming a child, that's their child, is really quite dangerous and is an insult to children's privacy.
Okay, so how have educators been reacting to this news? Like, I'm interested to hear how they're feeling about how this is all being handled.
Look, I think that we can talk about, you know, these implementations and all of these things, which are a lot of workers will have some, you know, support with. I think most workers, though, particularly union members, think that the overarching problem is the privatisation and under-regulation of the sector and the industry. By turning this profession, this sector, this industry into a cash cow, people can just make money off of children. I think that's where a lot of educators are really seeing the pitfalls, because those for-profits really have an incentive to not want to be doing every single checks and balances that's in place, because it's cheaper and more efficient and you can hire and you can fill more spots and hire workers at a lower cost.
One of the questions that's being asked a lot at the moment this week is, are children safe in Australia, in Australian childcare centres?
Look, I think that children are safe in Australian childcare centres. I think that there's a bit of sensationalism, which always does come with these horrible, horrible stories. But once again, I think it loops back to, you know, you need to know that the service you're going to enroll your child into is high quality, isn't viewing children as a profit motive, which is unfortunately what a lot of these private services do.
So going forward, what other things you'd like to see change?
I think that stronger regulations, I think actually having a strong regulatory body in place with much more powers to ensure protection for both children and early educators is just a no-brainer. I think it's too under-regulated, too over-privatized. As long as that's the norm in early education, horrible things will be happening and it needs to be addressed seriously.
Just in terms of these stories, how does it impact the workers who have to show up every day? Like, is that something that you find, that there is this level of mistrust that workers are having to deal with from parents, that people are abused at work for no reason?
There is a lot of abuse. There is a lot of harassment. I think it is a bit unfair to be demonising the sector for the actions of people who shouldn't have been in that sector in the first place.
All right, Seb Hand from the United Workers Union. Appreciate you coming on Hack.
All good.
And we've got a lot of messages coming through. Someone says the system is so broken in all areas when it comes to protecting victims. It's honestly so heartbreaking listening to all this. Another person says this is a disgrace nationwide. It's putting profit before humanity. Look, another aspect of all of this is what it means for male childcare workers, because if you've been seeing some of the updates on social media, if you've been reading some of the comments, people are out there saying they don't trust men in early childhood education, they wouldn't use a centre that employs men. And so there are obviously concerns that this could drive innocent male workers from the sector. With me now is Nick Stevens, who's been working in early childhood education for 10 years. He's experienced the stigma and he's here to chat with us about some of his career. Nick, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
No worries.
As a childhood educator yourself, how are you feeling this week?
I guess over the last few days, it's taken a while to kind of hit. Being asked to come on today has maybe made it hit a bit quicker how serious all of this is. I've got a pretty good feel of how other men are feeling in the industry, and it's certainly a shock for everyone.
Yeah, as I said, there's already been a lot of negative commentary aimed towards men in childcare online, people saying they can't be trusted, that they're suspicious. What's it like for you to hear stuff like that?
It's obviously not good. I always tell people that I've never kind of suffered any kind of discrimination in my personal experience, but I'm part of a male early childhood educator group, and we hear stories all the time of men who get told they shouldn't be working with kids, or they're not allowed in bathrooms, they're not allowed to change nappies. So I'm sure with this news, that's probably going to get worse.
You say you haven't faced much scrutiny in the past, that you've been pretty lucky in that regard. It's estimated that only about 4% of childcare workers are men. Are you worried that men might be turned off, or might be worried about the community reaction to stories like this, and they may either decide not to go into the industry, or if they're in it, they may quit?
Yeah, I think without a shadow of a doubt, we're going to lose some men today from this news, and then recruiting males into the industry becomes much trickier because that stigma only grows. And as a male who's trying to attract other males into the field, it just puts another barrier and another reason why they shouldn't. So, children miss out on that.
But why did you get into childcare? I'm interested to hear your kind of path into the sector. Were you always drawn to it?
Yeah, just from a very young age, I just loved I loved connecting with children. I loved sort of bringing back that play instinct in myself that I had as a child, and it just came so naturally to me. And I think that's the story of a lot of men in the industry, is this job calls them. They don't kind of come into this work even necessarily because they want to. It kind of calls them to it. And it's just sad to know that there's men who search for this job to do awful things and aren't kind of brought in because of a passion and a want to protect children.
Have you yourself faced any kind of uncertainty from people? Like when they've met you or asked what kind of job you do, they've been a bit surprised that you're in childcare?
Surprised, yes. I don't know if I'm oblivious to it or I'm just lucky with the people I speak to, but I receive nothing but support for the work that I do and the parents I've interacted with. But I work really, really hard to make those connections with parents and build that trust. And I think for any male educator, they know how hard you have to work to build that trust, because your work, the work we do with children is sacred, and I take that trust on very seriously. I receive nothing but support in my work.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with early childhood educator Nick Stevens about men working in the industry, stigma, the reaction to abuse allegations in Victoria. We're hearing from you on the text line. Alicia in Newport says there's a similar trend of poor equality and safety after privatisation in the aged care sector too. Someone else says, as a childcare trainee, this whole story is just really upsetting to me. And Charlie says, just look at the low percentage of male primary school teachers. Most kids don't see a male teacher until high school. Yeah, are there benefits, do you think, Nick, for men in particular being in this area? Like, what do you see as the advantage of having men in early childhood education?
There's incredible benefits. I know personally I work out in Western Sydney, and for 40%+ of our children, I'm the only male role model that they have. They don't have a dad in the picture, they don't have uncles in the picture, and we are that male role model, and maybe the only positive male role model they'll have for the first 13 years of their life. So the impact of men, especially in early childhood, is massive, and only a few children really get to experience that because there's so few men. And yeah, perhaps with this news, even fewer children will get to experience that.
You quit the profession a few years ago, but you're back now. What brought you back?
I did primary education for a bit, and I missed the relationships you have in early childhood. It's a unique relationship you have with children, in which you are guiding them through really vulnerable moments of their life. And I think for me, as I was saying, I hold that very sacred, that we've got these vulnerable children, and it's what draws me into the job, is to be a safe person for them. But at the same time, that vulnerability can attract the wrong people too, and clearly that's what's happened in Victoria.
Are you worried about what this means going forward? What would you like to see change in the industry that, you know, could help things?
Yeah, I think the reaction for everyone is how did this happen? Anyone that works at a quality service has that question on their mind of how did this happen? How was a male allowed one-on-one with a child for an extended period to do these things? So regulations need to change, practices need to change, and ratios need to change. The more adults you have in a room working with children, the less likely something like this can happen.
Well, look, just to be clear, these are all allegations at the moment. The charges have been laid. They will be tested in court, no doubt. We're hearing more details every day. But for now, early childhood educator Nick Stevens, thank you very much for coming on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got some messages coming through. Mel in Melbourne says early childcare workers should be required to have higher qualifications at uni, like a bachelor at least. Another person says, also as a male educator, I agree. This situation has put the stigma up by a lot. And Marin says, I'm the director of 3 early childhood education services. The issue isn't whether it's private or not. It's about how the service is run and the management team running it.
Hack. I really wish I could document the fear, the feelings, the smell for you, but it's only the footage.
On Triple J.
We're going to head overseas now, and there's some fresh hope of a ceasefire in Gaza. US President Donald Trump says Israel has agreed to the necessary conditions to finalise one, but there's no confirmation from either Israel or Hamas that a ceasefire will happen. Now, it comes amid an ongoing aid shortage in Gaza, as Alice Angeloni explains.
For weeks, there have been some horrific scenes coming out of Gaza. Palestinians near aid distribution centres flee. as gunshots ring out. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, hundreds of Palestinians have been killed over the past month at food distribution sites. The Israeli military acknowledges that civilians have been harmed at these sites.
The Israeli military has opened an inquiry into possible war crimes over allegations Israeli soldiers deliberately shot unarmed civilians near Gaza aid sites.
The Israeli military has also said its forces had been issued new instructions with, quote, lessons learned. But is the war about to pause?
And so there's another possibility of a ceasefire in Gaza.
A few hours ago, this news broke, with Donald Trump following up days of hints with a string of posts on Truth Social.
US President Donald Trump says Israel has agreed to terms for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza.
Trump posted that Israel had agreed to the necessary conditions for a 60-day ceasefire, during which time the US will work with all parties to end the war.
President Trump says the Qataris and Egyptians, who he says have worked very hard to help bring peace, will deliver this final proposal.
President Trump wrote,
I hope for the good of the Middle East that Hamas takes this deal, because it will not get better, it will only get worse.
This all comes ahead of a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington next week.
Well, he's coming here. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about the great success we had in Iran. We had an incredible success, like really nobody's had in many, many years. We're also going to talk about Gaza.
In the past 24 hours, Israeli attacks in Gaza have killed 116 Palestinians and injured 463, according to the health authorities there.
The total of people killed in Gaza during the month of June was just over 2,000.
And ever since a brief ceasefire between Israel and Hamas broke in March, strikes have continued. Earlier in the week, at a cafe near Gaza City where people come to charge their phones and use the internet, an Israeli strike killed at least 30 people and wounded dozens more, most of them women, children and journalists, according to health authorities. Hani was there.
Suddenly, we heard a loud explosion and started running. We found human remains scattered in the sea. This is a public area where people come to find some relief, but they're still targeted.
Amid the Israeli strikes this week, people in Gaza have been hopeful of a ceasefire, with Donald Trump openly saying he wanted one after the one he helped put together between Iran and Israel last week appeared to hold.
From time to time, you hear that there is a truce, and a little later, you hear that there is no truce. Our psyche and nerves are exhausted.
This is a dream for us, for the people of Gaza. This is a dream because, frankly, we are tired.
We don't know yet what Hamas makes of this potential ceasefire and whether or not it will hold.
This attempt to broker a truce between Israel and Palestine is really an attempt to broker a truce between the US and Israel on one side, who are attacking the Palestinians on the other.
Rami Houri is a distinguished public policy fellow at the American University of Beirut.
The US is not an impartial mediator. It is an active protagonist in the war and has been for 50 years.
He says this makes it more complicated.
Therefore, Hamas's demands are more stringent. They won't settle for anything except a complete end of the war. Full Israeli withdrawal, end of the fighting.
Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni with that story, and obviously more updates on any potential ceasefire as we hear them. You can also grab them on ABC News as well. We're going to move on now, talk about sport.
Hack! I want to make sure the millions of Australians who love their sport are able to watch those games.
I mean, these foreign-owned streaming services give no promotion to the game.
Government regulation has meant that it is increasingly difficult for free-to-air TV to operate.
On Triple J.
Yeah, we're hearing a lot about access to sport at the moment, and I'm wondering if you're finding it harder to access your favourite sport. Maybe because it's moved to a subscription service, or you're in a regional area and you're really battling, because we know some footy nuts in regional South Australia and New South Wales are missing out because of a breakdown in negotiations between TV networks. It's something in the headlines this week. Officials, authorities trying to sort it out. Why is this happening? And can we expect less free access to sport in the years ahead? Well, with us now is Hunter Fujak, who's from Deakin Uni. He's an expert in this area. Hunter, thanks for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
Some communities in regional South Australia and New South Wales, as I said, are no longer able to access stuff like that, AFL, motorsport. What's going on?
Yeah, so these three specific regions are the unfortunate victims of politics between WIN, who are the big major regional broadcaster, and Seven West Media, in that they're the last remaining regions where Channel 7 doesn't directly own the access to regional broadcasting, and they do it through WIN. So Seven in 2021 bought their major distributor Prime, and then in the last couple of days they announced the purchase of other regional networks through Southern Cross Austereo, and that literally left these three regions as the last ones where they had an agreement with WIN to be the main telecaster. And I guess WIN has decided to throw the cat amongst the pigeons and cut them off because Nine is now their major partner.
Okay, so the deal has not worked out. Are there rules in place to stop this kind of thing happening, to make sure that people do have access to live sport?
There are many, many, many rules in media, and specifically in sport. One area that I suppose is less regulated is that relationship between broadcasters at the regional level and the metropolitan level. Historically, there has always been this kind of balance where the best interests overall for all parties tends to win out, and therefore all Australians get coverage one way or another. Well, this is really, I suppose, a bit of an anomaly in that, in a brief moment in time, the interests between the regional and metro broadcasters don't align. And unfortunately for those three regions, that's created a really negative outcome. But overall, this is relatively an anomaly.
We've got some messages coming through. JC in Canberra says, free-to-air sports have pushed me to streaming because of all the advertising they shove down my throat. Banners that take up screen space and during breaks as well is JC's opinion there. Another person says, I live in a capital city. It's a disgrace that I can only watch two free AFL games a week. Yeah, Hunter, I mean, there have been some changes in sports broadcasting this year. We know live AFL coverage, some of it at least, has moved behind a paywall. How big of an issue is this?
Well, I think I'll just take a quick moment to, I suppose, respond to those comments. And that is, there's nothing that's really free in this society, right? When we say free-to-air, what we're really doing is paying for watching that for free with our attention to ads. And so it's not truly free in that sense, right? Because these major networks need to recoup their costs. And those costs come from the fact that the NRL and the AFL charge hundreds of millions of dollars to give their rights to those broadcasters. So I would encourage listeners to not necessarily be as angry at the broadcasters as they might seem, because ultimately they're just trying to recoup their costs as private businesses. And if anyone is to blame for the amount of ads you see, it's probably those sport organisations who insist on hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue.
So can we expect more sport to move behind paywalls?
Yes and no. So we are very lucky in this country, despite our complaining, that we have amongst the most sport on free-to-air television of anywhere in the world. And that is because we have this legislation called the anti-siphoning list, which predicted back in 1995 that if there weren't protections in place, sport would be lost to pay TV. So we have amongst the most sport on free-to-air of anywhere in the world. That is not to say that the trend is not heading in a worrisome direction. And in the last year, the anti-siphoning list legislation has been updated to sort of welcome it to the 21st century. And critically, within that legislation, OTT platforms like Netflix are allowed to bid for the free-to-air rights of the NRL and AFL, and it's only the analog rights that are protected under that legislation.
And just quickly, we've only got 30 seconds left, Hunter, but are you worried about like the democratisation of sport, what this could mean for sports fans going forward, or you feel like we're in a good spot?
Relative to world standards, we're in a great spot. We will inevitably have to pay more and more for sport, but compared to other places in the world, we are a lucky country.
Okay, well, thank you so much for giving us an update, explaining all of that to us, because it is really complicated. There's a lot of deals happening on all sides of the country with different channels, different broadcasters, different sports organisations. Hunter Fujak from Deakin Uni, appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
And we've still got a lot of messages coming through, not only on this story, but also the childcare story we were speaking about earlier. Someone says, I find this sickening and horrifying. This kind of thing stays with you for life. I love hearing Nick speaking about safety and the sacred nature of his work. Talking about Nick, the male childcare worker we spoke to, about some of the stigma that men sometimes face. Someone else says career progression is also super hard in childcare because there's big stigma about being a creepy old man as you get older. And another person just says, male or female, it shouldn't matter. Children need role models. Look, that is all we've got time for on Hack for today. Hack.